Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is hour number three as we continue. Thanks for joining us on Sports Map Radio. All right, we're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals, their big game Thursday night against the Green Bay Packers. You know, it's big because they're 7-0, and, you know, they're cruising, and the Packers are 6-1, and they're cruising too, but the Packers will be out two key players. We'll talk about that coming up. Also, Jay Morrison is going to join us from The Athletic, and we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. What a surprise the Cincinnati Bengals are, right? Look, people thought that they would be good, but what were we saying all summer long about them? You know, they could just be that pesky team that makes it really difficult for the Ravens and the Browns and the Steelers to really take a hold of the division, meaning they weren't just going to be an easy two victories, that they were going to be a challenge. But they're more than a challenge. They're a really good football team with the confidence that Joe Burrow has playing in this league. When you think about it, he was winning some games before the injury, and he's winning games now. I mean, he is keeping this. Again, think about where he was just a couple of years ago, where he couldn't crack through at Ohio State. He got an opportunity at LSU. Nobody really knew who he was. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they go 15-0, win a national championship. He wins a Heisman Trophy. He's the number one pick in the draft. And then he's got a team right now that had such a good win against the Ravens that people are now putting the Bengals in that sort of category of, well, how good are they? Because we really think we may have a team here in the AFC that is part of the conversation. We'll see as the season progresses. It's easy to catch lightning in a bottle for a couple of weeks where you really are shining. But I think there's something there. They were criticized for not taking an offensive lineman. They went with Ja'Marr Chase. That's clearly working out. So there's a lot of things that are going on. And remember, too, they stuck with Ja'Marr Chase and believed in him when he was dropping passes. This is a guy that didn't play his final year at LSU, opting out due to COVID-19. So he was very, 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 very rusty getting into the NFL. But Burrow, who lives three houses down from him in the neighborhood, always said, that's my guy. That's my teammate. I believe in them, and I'll throw to them all day, all the time. And that's what they're doing in Cincinnati. Coming up, the Cardinals and the Packers, a Thursday night game. Is it a pressure game for Arizona to sort of really show who they are? Well, we'll examine that next as we continue at Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is hour number three. Hey, Jay Morrison's going to join us in a little less than half an hour. We'll talk Cincinnati Bengals with him. Thursday night, a really good one, Arizona against Green Bay. But Alan Lazard is now out due to COVID-19. And Davante Adams is also out because of COVID-19. The article that brought this to my attention about Lazard mentioned really quickly that he's not vaccinated. And because of that, he's going to have to quarantine for 5 days. So, but nevertheless, Aaron Rodgers is going to be out with those two guys. He still has Randall Cobb kicking around. Still has Aaron Jones running the football. But he doesn't have Davante Adams there. He doesn't have Alan Lazard.
Now, so, favorite Cardinals now?
Yeah. Cardinals were a 6-point favorite at home for this one, I think.
I think, is this the game? If they beat the Packers, we will finally respect them?
That's got to be it. That's my question for this. It's not so much what does Green Bay do. Aaron Rodgers has got some other weapons. He'll be fine. By the way, Davante Adams has missed 6 games in the past 2 seasons. The Packers are 6-0.
Yeah.
When he is out. So they asked him about that. And of course the team is not going to say, "Well, he's easily replaceable. That's why we're 6-0." No, they mentioned he's very, very valuable. We really don't know why, but we've got guys stepping up, but he's still very important because you don't want to say, "Yeah, when Davante Adams doesn't play, we just have other guys who are equal to the task." But I think this is more about Arizona because we know Green Bay, and I want to set it up in this way. You know, when you're a team that, I don't want to say Arizona's coming out of nowhere because the division is really good and we kind of liked where they were progressing, but there are teams in your conference that are just the same old really good roadblocks that are you're going to approach, right? For the AFC for a long time, it was New England, Pittsburgh, Baltimore was on that list even with Joe Flacco, Kansas City more recently, where you'd get really good, people really like you, but there was always like, yeah, okay, but let's see how they do against these three or four teams that have been around for a long period of time. Peyton Manning and the Broncos were one of those teams. Peyton Manning and the Colts were one of those teams. The Dallas Cowboys have been that team occasionally, right? Is that what Arizona has here in a game against the Packers? Because I'm looking at their schedule. Outside of the Rams, they don't really have a win against a good team that we knew was good at the time they played them. I'm not going to count the Titans. When they played the Titans, it was week one. The Titans. Okay, well, everybody's 0-0. Maybe we thought the Titans were decent, and that's still a dominating win. But they did beat the Rams when the Rams were kind of, all right, the Rams are good. Matt Stafford's working. The Niners aren't really anything to write home about. The Browns aren't really anything to write home about right now. The Texans stink. The Jaguars stink. Is this a game? You're right. The overriding question, is this the game, even a shorthanded Packers team, that Arizona, is there a little bit of pressure here for Arizona to say, look, we've done what we were supposed to do against these teams on our schedule, but the real meat of how we're going to be judged and how good we are is games like this. It's going to be a game like this, the Rams again, the Dallas Cowboys late in the season. And that's what I'm curious about. Are they 7-0? Is their season going to be lost? Is it going to be lost if they lose? So what if they lose? But it's more than that. If on the flip side, we say things like Buffalo needed to get over the mental hurdle of beating Kansas City, and Sal Capaccio told us in Buffalo, that's exactly what happened after they beat Kansas City. And if Tennessee was going to do the same thing to Buffalo and to Kansas City and Teresa Walker, she said that's exactly what happened to them. Isn't the flip side true? Right? Isn't the other side true, that Arizona, even though there's no pressure here, is saying, look, this is a team we're going to have to get by. This is a team we're going to have to beat. Maybe not this time, but if we're going to go to the Super Bowl, we're probably going to run into this team. Probably. And I think that's what's going to happen Thursday night. Again, must win is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that feeling of, are we the elite team in the NFC? Are we? Well, there's a guy who's been elite for a long time in this conference. Let's go beat him. And let's see what happens. I mean, Seattle was probably that for a couple of years too. So that's what I'm getting at. And by the way, people in Denver, Vance Joseph has done a fantastic job with this defense. I know he didn't work out as a head coach, but he has been fantastic. They're only allowing 16 points per game, and they're putting up 32 a contest. So I'm curious to where this game is going. What do you think there's pressure here for Arizona, or do you think they just go, we'll play it, and then we'll see you in January?
No, I think there's pressure here. Just because, you know, this look, I think they're fighting for a little respect, because right now, I mean, I'm not going to say it's the most disrespected 7-0 team we've ever had. We've had teams that have just quietly just been winning. I remember we talked about the Chargers doing that one year where it was like, guys, did you guys realize the Chargers only lost one game? And we're like,
yeah,
15 games into the season. We've had those type of stories before, but them being the only undefeated team, no one has, coming from one of the toughest divisions in football, no one's really giving them any credit.
Well, you know, it sort of reminds me a little of the Steelers last year, but the Steelers are a little different because Roethlisberger has won a couple of Super Bowls and Tomlin's won a Super Bowl and the organization has been successful. But I remember when they went on their winning streak, you were just going, there's another shoe that's going to drop, and when it does, it may not be good. And I think people are wondering about the same thing with Arizona. Is there another shoe that's going to drop and then it's not going to be good? Yeah, there's a narrow win against Minnesota that didn't look all that great. But you know what? There are wins on this schedule that are really impressive. Like, for example, you should clobber the Texans, right? They clobbered the Texans.
Yep.
That wasn't close. They didn't play down to the Texans level like we see sometimes teams do to bad teams, where all of a sudden you're like, why are we in the fourth quarter dogfight? Why is this happening? Right? Like Tennessee against the Jets is a perfect example. And we've seen it a number of times. No, they went into the game with the Texans and they were 17 point favorites and they won by 26. So yeah, is beating the Texans impressive? No, but it shows you that they're a team that when they were expected to be very good against them, they were very good against them. When the game against, they really took the Rams, they scored 37 points against the Rams. You know, they beat Jacksonville pretty comfortably, 12 points.
Yeah.
That's pretty comfortably. And then they demolished the Titans in week one. But you're right. I think people are like, but if they lost three of the next four, I wouldn't be shocked. Whereas the Packers, you would be shocked if that happens because Aaron Rodgers has credibility. Like Aaron Rodgers has sort of a default status, right?
And Aaron Rodgers has told us to relax from time to time.
Right, exactly.
And maybe that's, I think it's like it's two issues, right? Because on the one hand, there is no pressure for the Cardinals because we're not expecting anything from the Cardinals. No one picked them to win the Super Bowl outside of Arizona. No one really said, keep an eye on this team. We've all said that this is an up-and-coming team, that they got something brewing here.
Oh, sure.
But they're a few years away yet.
Same thing with Cincinnati, right? Like
right.
Cincinnati was, like Arizona was supposed to be the Cincinnati of the AFC West, like a very good division of playoff teams. But Arizona was like, but you got to be careful because Arizona can beat you. And then don't think that you're just going to go to Arizona and just roll past this team. They're pesky. Kyler Murray can play. Cliff Kingsbury can coach. They've got some really good talent. Yeah, if you're Seattle, just be careful. That's not how it's played out. Cincinnati is the same thing. Cincinnati's like, no. We're good. And we're not only good, we're going to be near the top of the division. So don't mess around with us. That's the same thing that's going on with Arizona. Boy, I tell you this, I think this game, I'll tell you right now, I don't have a rooting interest in the game. I mean, I'm just going to enjoy it. But I'll be more fascinated with what the conversation is going to be Friday if Arizona wins this game than if Green Bay wins this game. Because if Green Bay wins this game, all right, there you go. Packers are rolling along. If Arizona wins this game, I think you're right. I think there's an uptick in, okay, this like it's now time to really start paying attention to this team. Really pay attention. If we've paid attention now, it's, let's say 80%, it's 100% now.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's where, because we still like the Rams and we still like the Buccaneers and we still like the Cowboys and we still like, who else is good in that conference? Am I missing team? Packers. But if they win this game, all of a sudden it's Arizona.
I think all of a sudden, if they win this game, all of a sudden there's a target on their back now.
Right. All of a sudden people are like,
where
okay.
Right now it's still like, it's the Cardinals.
Yeah. Right now in the playoffs, would you take Tom Brady or would you take Arizona?
Right.
Right? Would you take Dallas or Arizona?
Yeah. Those,
would you take
these
Aaron Rodgers or Arizona?
These are all no-brainers.
Right.
But well, I mean, if yeah, but
this
if
game, you might go, I don't know.
Kyler Murray goes out there. I mean, what if it's an absolute beatdown and the Cardinals just absolutely run the Packers out of the building?
Absolutely.
God, then we're all going to be looking at like, what, have we all been wrong about this team?
Maybe so. Maybe so. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Jay Morrison of the Athletics going to join us in 17 minutes. We're going to talk the Bengals and their amazing resurgence. Oh, that next is as we roll along on hour three on Sports Map Radio.
This
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better, drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Jay Morrison and The Athletic's going to join us in 13 minutes. We'll talk to him about the Cincinnati Bengals. College football, again, we talked earlier to Larry Lage of the AP on Michigan State coming up this weekend. The cocktail party game is coming up on Saturday in Jacksonville, Georgia and Florida. I don't know how much of a battle that's going to be, but Georgia is the number one team in the country. Alabama, though, has the weekend off. Texas Tech is going to Norman. They're going to take on Oklahoma. The Sooners are ranked fourth. As we talked about earlier this week, they were leapfrogged by one-loss Alabama. You know what the problem with that story has been this week? It goes to show you everybody who's ever thought that Alabama gets a free pass in the college football world, they went, yep, there you are, right there. Oklahoma did not lose and got jumped by a team that had lost this season. It's remarkable. But again, if you feel like it's such a quandary, if you're a voter in the AP or the coaches poll, again, your polls don't matter, but whatever. If you feel like Team A could beat Team B, do you put them in? You put them ahead of Team B? Like, if I got Alabama with one loss and I got Oklahoma with no losses, and I go on the field, I think that Alabama would beat Oklahoma. Do you feel like you have to do that? Because then you'd have to explain the Cincinnati question. Have we talked to one voter of either one, either, you know, the SIDs or the AP vote? Has anybody been asked the question, do you believe Cincinnati could beat Alabama on the field? Because the answer might surprise you. The answer might be from that AP writer or that coach/SID, no, but it doesn't matter. But then why in the world would Alabama vault over Oklahoma with a loss and Oklahoma remaining unbeaten? I don't care if they lost. I mean, I don't care if they just barely beat Kansas on the road. Now, Kansas is terrible. Sometimes you lay an egg a little bit. I know Oklahoma's played in too many close games this year that makes you nervous. I get it. But they also made a quarterback change. But at the same time, I wonder if that conversation is, if you say, look, I think Alabama could beat Oklahoma, but I think Cincinnati would lose to both of them, but it doesn't matter. They're unbeaten. They're number two. Man, I can't wait for the committee to release its rankings. I really want to know. There are so many unanswered questions about what they think of college football compared to what we've been seeing college football being portrayed at already this season. I mean, I think Alabama's great. I mean, obviously, everybody does, right? I think they're great. Do I think they're vulnerable? Yeah, I think they're vulnerable. I do think they're vulnerable. I'm very interested in what the SEC title game is going to look like when they face Georgia. I think Georgia's defense is historic. But I also know that if there's a team that can prepare for that defense better than anybody in the country, it's Alabama. I don't think it's Oklahoma. I don't think it'll be Cincinnati. I don't think it'll be whatever team comes out of the Big Ten. I think it's Alabama. I think there's only one team in the country that if I had to choose to go into the ring with Georgia to give me a fighting chance, if I had no other choice, and they said, you got to take one of these teams. You take one of these teams in that scenario, and everything is on the line for it. It would be Alabama. It wouldn't be Ohio State or Michigan or Michigan State or Oregon or Iowa. It wouldn't be any of those teams. It wouldn't be Notre Dame. It wouldn't be Wake Forest who can put up 70 points. It would be the Crimson Tide. That's the only one I would trust. And even then, I'd be very, very nervous if everything depended on them pulling that out. And I think the committee sees it the same way. And then if that was the case, then the committee would have to put Alabama too, and they're not going to do that. I just know they're not going to do that. I think they'll have Georgia 1. I think that's a no-brainer. I think they would have Alabama in the top four. I think they'd have Oklahoma up there. It's that Cincinnati spot. Where do they put them? Now, Jerry Palm has talked to us about this before when we meet up with them on Thursdays. The committee is supposed to give you a snapshot of what the college football season is like to them right now. And then when they gather, there's supposed to be a fresh start. You all know how the polls work. If I got you at three, it's going to take something to take you out of three. Like, for example, in Oklahoma's case, it was go on the road, barely beat a lousy Kansas team, and then hope that nobody else plays good, but oops, Alabama did. So you get leapfrogged. That's not the way the committee is supposed to work. The committee is supposed to go, here's our top four. Georgia, Alabama, Cincinnati, Oklahoma. And here's the rest of the top 25. Well, you only care about the top four, so here's those four. And then the next week, they could go, here's our top four. Georgia, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Cincinnati. And you go, well, what happened to Alabama? What do you mean, what happened to Alabama? That's not how we play the game. And you go, well, you had them at three last week. Doesn't matter. Fresh slate. We're not pressured to keep anybody anywhere any week because we thought that they were a five team or a six team or a one team or a two team. Nope. New week, new poll. But you know how hard it is to do that? That's hard to do. Ron and I have a little thing we call top five, bottom five. And while we'll shake it up a little bit, sometimes I remember who I had number one, and then I go, do I have to keep them there? Because they won again? Or can I move somebody up there too? The committee is supposed to take a clean slate. Georgia is not guaranteed to be number one just because they were number one the week before and then won again. They're supposed to be number one and then the next week prove again that they're number one. And then prove again that they're number one. And then the final one that the committee is supposed to give you, and this is the way it's supposed to work. The committee is supposed to then go, okay, now we're going to tell you the top 25 for the entire season. We've been giving you these weekly snapshots, but now we're putting it all into perspective. And even though we are used to time and time again, polls looking kind of the same with some up and down movement based on losses, the committee has taken teams out who didn't lose at all. That's the way they're supposed to work. So when people say, well, what if they come out their first one and they have Cincinnati at two? Aren't they pressured to keep them at two the whole year? That's the exact question I asked Jerry Palm. And Jerry said, no, that's not how it's supposed to work. Cincinnati can be in the top four every single poll. But when it comes to the final four, the final one, the one that sends these teams to the playoff, they may be nowhere to be found. That's a real thing. I would find it hard to believe, and I think they'd have to explain that to me. But I do think that's a possibility. I mean, think about the basketball committee, the one that puts the tournament together. Like, I say this all the time, but I hate when Jay Billis or Dick Vitale cry on TV, scream that an 18-team win team is, it's an outrage that they're out. No, you win some more games. College football is different. There's only four. And if Cincinnati was two, three, four, week in and week out, and then the final poll came out and they were seventh, I'd be pretty livid if I was Luke Fickell. I'd be pretty livid. And maybe that's not going to happen. Jay Morrison next. The rise of the Cincinnati Bengals. Or is this the same old Bengals that are good, but will disappoint you in January? That's all coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call, Sportsman Brady.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, working on Jay Morrison of The Athletic. The 5-2 Cincinnati Bengals beat the Baltimore Ravens 41-17 Sunday, and now a force to be reckoned with. They've got the Jets coming up this weekend, and then a game against the Browns, Raiders, and Steelers. Those three games could be difficult. We'll see. But right now, the real talk should be how good this football team is. As we talked about earlier, preseason expectation, at least from some, including me, was they would be good, they'd be pesky, they'd win some games in the division, they could make it really annoying for the teams in the AFC North that are going to the playoffs. But now they sit on top of the division at 5-2. Jay Morrison joining us from The Athletic on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, Jay?
I'm good, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what was the thing that worked for them against the Baltimore Ravens? What was the key to this 41-17 victory?
I guess you would say adjustments. They did everything they wanted to except throw the ball over the top, and that's how they've kind of jump started this offense in the past. They got off to slow starts. They hit a deep ball over the top to Jamar Chase right before halftime, and then they just take off in the second half. Baltimore was just determined not to let the Bengals beat them over the top, and they said, "Okay, we'll hit you underneath." And this is what they loved about Jamar Chase, almost more than his ability to take the top off the defense, is what he can do with the ball in his hands. When they drafted him, they just glowed about how much he's like a running back. He's built like a running back. And if you get a guy like that, break one tackle, he can be gone. And we saw that. He really had no problem with one of the best corners in the league in Marlon Humphrey, and he would shed a tackle and get these big gains. And It was Joe Burrow recognizing the pressure and finding Jamar Chase underneath and then letting Jamar Chase take off on his way to an offensive player of the month award.
Let's go back to draft day with Jamar Chase. He opted out his final year at LSU. Everyone, sort of the pundits, however much stock you put in that, were thinking, oh, the Bengals should go offensive line here. They go with Chase. It's exciting to have a new weapon, but at that moment, how did that go over with the more detail-oriented fan base that kind of went, well, we have some problems X, Y, and Z that we'd like to fix?
You know, it felt like it was about 50-50 between Team Sewell and Team Chase. And I think the people on Team Chase would not have been that upset if they took Penei Sewell. The people on Team Sewell were irate when they took Jamar Chase. They're like, it's not going to do you any good to have a great wide receiver. You can't throw him the ball. This O-line needs help. But the Bengals were the people inside the organization that we talked to before the draft were all in on Chase. They like Penei Sewell. They think he's going to have a fine career. But they said Jamar Chase was going to be a difference maker, and they were right. And they go out and they get a rookie guard in the second round in Jackson Carman, who's not been a world beater, but he's getting better every week. This offensive line as a whole is getting better every week. And it was one of those things where they already signed Riley Reiff in free agency. So if they did draft Penei Sewell, they were going to move him inside to guard this year anyhow. It made much more sense to go with Chase if he could be this kind of player. But even what he's showing now, I think, is even far and beyond what anybody in that organization thought he was going to be through week 7.
And we always see good quarterback wide receiver relationships, and obviously these two were at LSU. What is that relationship like, even more because they went to college together, even before, because they won a national title together? I read that they don't live that far from each other. Like, what is this dynamic that's a little bit more deeper than other QB wide receiver relationships?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, we saw that with this underneath stuff Sunday, where Joe Burrow did a few back shoulder throws, and there has to be a lot of trust and faith there and chemistry. And I think the other spot where this really came in big was in the preseason, in the OTAs and camp. I mean, a lot was made about Jamar Chase not being able to catch. Yeah. And it wasn't like anyone thought it was going to define his career, that he would eventually get it turned around. But if you have a quarterback that's never played with a guy like that before, maybe he starts having some doubts in the back of his mind. Joe Burrow had played with Ja'Marr Chase for a couple years. He knew what kind of hands that guy has, and he never wavered. He just kept going back to him, and he kept defending him. He said, he's going to be fine, he's going to be fine. And then comes out week one, the first ball he throws him is a little difficult. It wasn't an easy one where Ja'Marr had to think about it. Ja'Marr goes and gets it. I think Ja'Marr's had maybe one or two drops all season since then.
You know, teams, we've seen plenty of teams in the NFL that are, five, you know, get like to 5-2 or like 6-1 or whatever, and they're good. But, you know, we still have a lot to play for. In the past, I've seen this Bengals team, and I don't know how long you've been around this organization, but I've seen this team have Andy Dalton, Carson Palmer, but they weren't fearful. Like, they were good, and you should respect them, but they didn't scare teams. I get a feeling that this team can scare teams. Is there a difference between the good Bengal teams in the past and this one? Because there is a history here of sort of futility within the organization.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because even when the Bengals were rolling in 2015, they got off to that 8-0 start. It wasn't like they were these monsters that people feared. Like you said, they weren't scaring people. This team scares people. They have talent all across that offense. And, I mean, if you got Ja'Marr Chase that could take the top off, you got one of the best slot receivers, possession receivers in the game, Tyler Boyd. Joe Mixon is having a fantastic year. And then you put the Joe Burrow piece in there. Andy Dalton was a good quarterback, but he was never this, you know, kind of take the team by the throat and lead them to greatness type of guy. It was more kind of relying on the guys around him. And Joe Burrow just has that killer instinct, and he's just a difference maker. And it's not so much his physical skills, it's his mental ability to get them. And Andy did this too, get him out of a bad play, get him into a good one. But there's just this different attitude among this team. And they've arrived so fast. You do kind of wonder about the sustainability, because we have seen Bengal teams start fast in the past and kind of peter out. I don't know that we're going to see this team fall off, but I don't know if they can keep this up. It's going to be really interesting to watch in the second half of the season.
Even though we had kind of a short time with Burrow in his rookie season, what have you noticed in terms of this season from the growth of last year, from the way he handled rehabilitation, from the way he, you know, just developed more and more as a leader? What's the difference in year two to year one?
Yeah, I think it is recognition, and we saw it last year where he had a decent game against the Browns the first time they faced him, and then he throws for 406 and has this incredible game the second time he sees him. And then, you know, we saw it last year, the Pittsburgh game was really ugly. He gets his second shot at Pittsburgh this year, and they kind of run him out of the stadium, beat him by double digits on the road. And same thing, Ravens, 15 hits, 7 sacks. He looked lost and confused like Joe Burrow's never looked before the first time he faces him. And now he comes back and does what he did on Sunday. It's just his ability to adapt and learn on the fly and pick up little things. And I do. He was voted a captain as soon as he got here. But that rehab, I mean, he took his leadership to another level, because the guys in the locker room saw how hard he worked and how hard he fought to get back and be ready for the start of OTAs. That's a hard thing to do when you tear your ACL late November. And it's just, it's everything. It's the confidence, it's his play, it's his mental ability. There's not a stat that he hasn't only improved, that he's improved by light years. Completion percentage, passer rating, yards per attempt, they're all just off the charts from where they were last year.
One of the themes we've kind of been talking about over the last couple of weeks is these teams that have gotten these wins that are just a little bit more. There's a psychological edge to the winning. We think of Buffalo beating Kansas City, or we think of Tennessee beating both Buffalo and Kansas City. Is that the case with Cincinnati, this win against Pittsburgh, even though they're not quite the same Steelers team, and especially this win against Baltimore? You know, taking Burrow and putting him in this sort of black and blue division, it's like throwing a baby in a pool and going, go swim, because this is going to be tough. What is the mental state of going to Baltimore and beating this team that is a playoff caliber team, an AFC elevated team, and not only doing it, but doing it that well?
Yeah, it was huge because, all right, look, everyone knows we're not allowed in the locker room anymore, so we don't really get to see how these guys react and how they look and talk when they're not in front of a microphone. And in Pittsburgh, we got down early. We're in the tunnel. We're watching them run off the field, and we're expecting them to be screaming and yelling and hooping and hollering. Like, yeah, we just beat the Steelers in their house. It was, they were all walking, heads down, matter of fact, business like. It was a little different Sunday in Baltimore. They were yelling. They were chirping at us because they saw all the media there. And they said, if you don't believe yet, you better start believing. And new Bengals. And they were all just shouting out these little phrases. And so there was a line. It was almost like the kids' soccer tunnel when the parents make when the kids run through. As soon as they would go turn the corner from where the media was standing, all a bunch of people were waiting for them. And every time a new guy would turn the corner, they would just erupt in there, and they would go through this little tunnel and slap five. It meant something to them. It definitely did. There is a new attitude on this team.
We talk about Ja'Marr Chase and we talk about Joe Burrow. Defensively, how are they? What are some other guys that have been really good this season?
Yeah, it's funny we're this far into the interview and we haven't talked about the defense yet, because that may be the biggest reason I think we all kind of expected to see this offense take off this year. What the defense has done has been remarkable. I mean, this was they have 17 sacks all of last year. They're already at 19. I mean, they're a top 10 team in almost every defensive category, and the whole talk this offseason is if the defense can just be average, they can just be middle of the pack, this team's got a chance to be good because of the offense. And the defense really kind of took off even before the offense. The offense struggled a little bit the first few games. The defense has been great all year. And they go and they get Larry Ogunjobi from Cleveland. He's been a monster inside. DJ Reader, their prize piece last year, only played five games, had a season-ending injury in Baltimore. That was a big game for him Sunday to kind of go back on the same field where that happened. He's played incredible. Chidobe Awuzie, the cornerback from Dallas, has played out of his mind. Mike Hilton, they get him from Pittsburgh. That's another big thing. They get two free agents that are used to this division, that play in this division, know what this division is like. It's really transformed this defense.
Jay, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. We were talking in the preseason about, you know, hey, look, this Bengals team is good. They could be pesky, you know, just annoy the Ravens, annoy the Browns, annoy the Steelers, where they're not just going to be easy wins. I had no idea they'd be on top of the division. It's a real surprise. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, you and me and about every other person in the country didn't see this coming. It's been amazing to watch.
Jay, really appreciate it. Hope to catch up with you down the stretch as we get closer and closer to the end of the season. Thank you so much, my friend.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Jay Morrison of The Athletic on the Cincinnati Bengals. 5-2 Cincinnati Bengals. And as I said earlier, listen, as a Steeler fan, I've seen this team year in and year out, twice a year, right? Watch them, paying attention to them. And as I said, you know, even with Carson Palmer, even with Andy Dalton, good teams, really good teams. You mentioned the team that went 8-0. Yeah, but, I always go, in the end, they're Cincinnati. They'll find a way to mess this up. They'll find a way to not. I really do think this team is different. I think he's right. I think this is a different feeling. This is a young quarterback that is really confident and really good, and he's got weapons, and that defense is playing very well. Like he said, guys that have caught on to that team that know that division. It's not like other divisions. I'm not saying it's better, but it is an aggressive, physical division, has been for a really long time. And once you can adapt to it, know it, get used to it, that's why that win against the Ravens is a big deal. It's not just beating a good AFC team. That's a tough team to roll through in a very tough division. And Cincinnati, right now, so far, so good, is doing that. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. Getting ready for Denton Day on the network. I want to say happy anniversary to just about everybody I grew up with in the New England area, I should say. This is the date in 2004 that the Red Sox beat the St. Louis Cardinals to win the 2004 World Series. I think when you are a fan of any team, I think there are just moments in your life when there are just moments where you just go, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in sports. And for so many of my friends growing up, this was one of them, the Red Sox winning the World Series. Yes, the Patriots have gotten all those Super Bowls and the Celtics won championships, but the pain and agony of growing up a Red Sox fan in the 70s and 80s for most of my friends when I was a kid was brutal. I mean, it was brutal. It wasn't just 86. It was 88 with Clemens and losing to the A's in the playoffs. It was losing to the Yankees in 2003. And then, winning the World Series in 2004, something many thought that they'd never see, and they saw it on this state. And
it is funny, though, that you mentioned 86, because this is that day and well when they lost the World Series.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. 2 days later, they lost the World Series to the Mets.
Yeah, on this date in 86. So. But so they turned it around in 2004.
Yeah, exactly. And I always remember, Ben Simmons. What's his name? The guy who runs the Ringer. Bill Simmons. Sorry.
I was about to say Bruce Simmons. I'm like, that doesn't sound right either.
Bill Simmons. One time talked about it. He goes, it's great. But it changes, right? Like, there's a change now. There's no one's sympathetic to you anymore, right? You lose that. It's a good thing to lose because you won the championship. But when you live with that kind of pain for a long time and then it goes away, you almost don't know what to do, right? Well, the Red Sox did know what to do because they would win in 2007, they'd win in 2013, and they win in 2018, and they made it to the ALCS this year. So, again, on this day, 2004, the Red Sox were champs for the first time in a really, really long time, 86 years. All right, that'll do it for Sports Map Radio, for Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Denton Day is coming up next.